You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, to Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in La Roche-sur-Yon.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in La Roche-sur-Yon. On a housing estate / industrial estate, it feels like, just outside a sports hall in the Vendée. We're still in the Vendée.
It's even the capital of Vendée. It's the prefecture of the département de Vendée. Yeah, La Roche-sur-Yon. You want to know a little bit more about La Roche-sur-Yon?
Yes, please.
I'm going to tell you everything I know about La Roche-sur-Yon. It's actually quite a nondescript town. It's been actually built, you know, from scratch in the in the early 19th century on by order of Napoleon Bonaparte, you know, a Frenchman, a Corsican man you know well in England. And actually decided that in the past it was Fontenay-le-Comte, the main place in Vendée, and it was decided to move the prefecture here for many reasons. One was that the Vendéens, the people living here, are a rebellious kind, and they were against the revolution and stuff, so they were kind of rebels called Les Chouans. Mm. So it was decided to kind of tame them, so to create an entirely new town to establish the imperial power on the region. And secondly as well, because Vendée's got quite a large seafront, and it has always been in France from the central state in Paris, the impression that if you put capitals by the sea, there will be problems. Never put the capital of a region in a port. London's a port, but you're an exception. So there we are. And so La Roche-sur-Yon, kind of nondescript, built in the 19th century, hence a very kind of logical, squares and parallel and streets, and not a lot of a charm, whereas the rest of the region is pretty nice.
For a pretty nondescript place, you've done a very good job of describing it there, Francois. Well done.
Am I right in thinking then that were it not for had the Vendeans got their way, France may still have a royal family?
Yeah, well, just after the revolution in the 1790s, an episode called the Wars of Vendée, and the Wars of Vendée were fought between the revolutionaries just after the revolution and these bands of rebels called Les Chouans. And they were in Brittany and they were in Vendée as well. And this is a very religious area. I must say it's the cradle of my family. So, they really believe in God, the Catholic Church, and the King. So in a way, they were really
conservative rebels.
Yeah, they were conservative rebels. It was kind of a counter-revolution, which is very funny. Even in my family, my father was a very hardline communist, and so very left-wing, and at the same time, being from Vendée, was kind of, standing up with the Chouans, whose political ideas were absolutely opposite to his. So, but there's a strong political identity.
Well,
here.
We were hearing about some of this over dinner last night. Really,
let's record that for the road trip episode Friends of the Podcast.
Let's do that. But yeah. That's a flavour of France from Francois, which will be a regular feature, because you actually work on the cultural guide to the Tour de France.
Yes, I do. For the Tour de France. I've been doing that for 10 years.
You know your onions, so to speak. let's crack on with the tale of the etape. I'll give you a bit of a tongue twister there. Another one. The stats around Sagan are staggering, aren't they?
They are.
Peter Sagan, the winner today. 99 Tour de France stages he has started, and he's finished in the top three in 37 of them. That's according to Daniel Lloyd. Really phenomenal, but he won today.
He did, yeah. Peter Sagan, the world champion, disqualified from the Tour de France 12 months ago, of course, in Vittel, and he's back. Second yesterday, won today. It was stage two from Mouilleron Saint-Germain to La Roche-sur-Yon, 182.5, mostly flat kilometres, just one categorised climb on the way, a fourth category one. Three riders got in the break. They were Dion Smith of Wanty Group Gobert, Michael Gergel of Trek and Sylvain Chavanel of Direct Energy. And the Kiwi Smith took the King of the Mountains points to take the jersey from Kevin Ledanois, who won it yesterday. Smith is the first Kiwi to wear the polka dot jersey in the Tour. A little bit of history for him. Shortly after winning the climb, he sat up, though, and went back to the peloton. And then a little bit after that, Gergel did the same, perhaps not fancying 4 hours out in the broiling heat.
In the company of Sylvain Chavanel.
With just Sylvain Chavanel. Yeah, but that left only Chavanel. He was alone after 35 kilometres, and he stayed away till not too far from the end. He's riding his 18th Tour. Today was his 350th stage. If he gets to the end of the second week, he'll have spent a whole year of his 39 years riding the Tour de France. That's quite mind-boggling, really. But it was the start of his farewell tour, because this is his last of his 18 Tour de France. We'll no doubt talk about him a bit more as the race goes on. But he was caught. And then, as we saw yesterday, there were crashes that shaped the rest of the race. With around 30 kilometres to go, Adam Yates went down. Mitchelton Scott managed to get him back up to the peloton. Arno Demar was off the back again, but he had a flat tyre. He was off the back yesterday and didn't manage to contest the sprint. Today he did get back, thanks to a spare wheel, or a wheel, from Tobias Ludvigsen. There was a little time bonus sprint where there's some seconds on offer. Chavanel was still out in front at that point, but interestingly, Geraint Thomas managed to nick a second there. Not that that's made any difference here today, but, you know, interesting that he went for that. With 7 kilometres to go, Marcel Kittel punctured, and that was the end of his chance. And then with around just under 2 kilometres to go, we noticed this corner as we drove in on the finish. It was a right-hander, probably a 90-degree right-hander, but going downhill as it went round the corner. And it looked tricky, and it proved troublesome for the peloton, because a lot of riders went down. Fernando Gaviria in the yellow jersey was ruled out because of that crash. Michael Matthews, several other sprinters. So a very reduced bunch of riders, probably only a dozen of them, contested the finish. And although Sonny Colbrelli of Bahrain Merida pushed Sagan very hard, Peter Sagan won the stage to take the yellow jersey from Gaviria. I think he's also in the points jersey. So Sagan's day. Just to mention two riders who have retired from the race, Gourmet Sigabou of Trek and Luis Leon Sanchez of Astana, are both out, having had problems today. Sigabu's ill, and Sanchez crashed into traffic island. Looked pretty nasty.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
I'm Simon from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives, and that riding's the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 RAFA clubhouses around the world, and we host 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See RAFA.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to RAFA for being our headline sponsor, of course. And as we heard there, that was Simon from RAFA. Of course, Simon Mottram, the chief executive and the founder of RAFA. I'll plug a rival podcast, because we, on the way over, we listened to Matt Barbette's new podcast, Home Roads. He goes for a bike ride with various luminaries and interviews them. And one of them that we listened to on the way over was with Simon Mottram. And it was really interesting, quite moving as well in places. So dig that out and have a listen to it if you've got any time to listen to anything at the moment. Save it till after the tour if you want. It's good.
Before we crack on with the Tour de France, Richard, first corrections corner of the race.
not the last.
Very early on. We were talking yesterday about the fact that you guys had interviewed Colombian and Swedish riders, and I was trying to shoehorn in a reference to England's magnificent World Cup run, suggesting you go and interview a Croatian rider next, and I suggested you might interview Christian Koren, but he's Slovenian. I meant, obviously, Christian Duresek of UAE. He's not from the UAE, he's Croatian or Croat, yeah. However. Well, but even that, Croatian or Croat, I've been picked up on that as well.
I'm sure I'll be bonding with him over the next few days. listen, let's talk in the first part about the wins. Peter Sagan, phenomenal. I mean, he does have an incredible knack of avoiding crashes, doesn't he? It's It cannot be a coincidence.
Apart from a fairly notable one in Vittel last year.
He didn't even come off. He didn't crash.
That's right. It wasn't the same kind of crash. He was not involved. He didn't bump into, you know, didn't miss a turn or bump into a, you know, traffic island, as they call them. We remember that. Had a quite a punch up with Mark Cavendish, and it's true. I mean, I don't know if it's his mountain bike background or it's just his skills. I mean, we know he's a very skilled and it's probably his you know sense of the race as well. He's always well placed, but you're right, he never crashes, almost never crashes.
Arnaud Démare went pretty close today as well.
Yeah, it just flatted, but we tend to hear and think that sprinting is a very difficult game, and you know it's part of the game to crash from time to time, but it doesn't seem to apply to Sagan.
I mean, when can you even remember him picking himself up off the road or having the kind of the injuries, the wounds that you see so many riders with?
The only time I can remember was when he got knocked off by a vehicle in Vuelta.
Yeah, that's right.
I really can't remember another time.
That's the same. I mean, you know, on the Vuelta, you know.
Threw down under in 2010.
Yeah, but it's never his fault. In a way, it's never his fault, because even the Cavendish incident, I mean, you know, he was trying too hard, but I mean, he didn't do anything wrong in terms of, you know. So, you know, we have guys like David Moncucci in the past, every time he was going down and raining, or while Geraint Thomas has a tendency to crash frequently. You feel some from time to time it's their fault, you know, but it's never the case with Sagan.
You spoke to his sports director or one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned that to him. I said, you know, well, the incredible thing about Sagan is that he doesn't crash. And I asked Pojka whether it was because of his skills or because of the teamwork. And let's see what Pojka has to say.
Well, as we can see, real happiness in the Bora Hansgrohe team tonight.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. So early in the tour to win the stage, to have green, yellow. And we saw already yesterday the team did an amazing job, and we was out from any troubles. Also, we need for sure a little bit luck, and last year we don't had it. This year I think it come back, and we are very strong, and nice to have that victories.
You mentioned last year. Is it a vindication, a revenge from last year?
No, I mean, last year, it was a very hard tour for the whole team, and we lose Rafa, we lose Peter, and we win two stages. That was not bad, but we are able to do much more, and I hope we can show it.
We saw that lots of sprinters and lots of leaders had problems in crashes yesterday and today. You managed to get away from it. I mean, is it due to the team's work, or is it a little bit of luck, or both?
For sure, both. I mean, we start very early to be in the right position with the whole team. And doesn't matter. We need also a little bit luck. And I think in the moment comes all together, and that's why we are on a very good mood.
So that was Enrico Pojka, sports director of the Bora Hansgrohe team, talking about his rider, Peter Sagan. The question now is, how many stages will Sagan win between now and the end of the tour? I mean, keep saying it, but he could win every single day after tomorrow's team time trial. It's he won't, I don't think,
no,
but
I
he could.
He will.
But he could win, a handful. He could be this year's Marcel Kittel.
Well, what about last year's Marcel Kittel? Who is still Marcel Kittel? Lionel, because you spoke to him at the finish.
I did, yeah. I wasn't brave enough to ask him about the choice of all green skin suit.
When he's not really the green jersey wearer. He was wearing it because he wanted to wear a skin suit.
Yes, I will give the benefit of the doubt there.
The skin suit that they had was obviously all green.
Yeah, the custom is that if you're not the actual leader of the competition, but you wear the jersey, you kind of dial it down a bit. But all green. He looked the jolly green giant, but he wasn't so jolly at the finish because a puncture ended his chance of winning the stage. This is what he had to say at the finish.
Were your puncture, was it too close to the finish to even consider the possibility of getting back in?
6Ks before the finish in the Tour de France, it's impossible to come back, especially when it's a final like this, up and down. So yeah, it was quite clear, unless there is a big crash really, that there is no chance.
A chance in a couple of days' time, though?
That wasn't the last sprint here. And that's good. So it's important now to keep going and not to think too much about this.
What about the loss of points for the green jersey? Is that a concern or still too early?
What can I do? I mean, it wasn't my main ambition to ride here for the green jersey anyway. So the bad luck is bad luck. And it is what it is.
Very philosophical.
The cycling podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Whether you're grinding up the French Alps or just taking your mates on a local loop, Science in Sport Rego Rapid Recovery Plus will help you recover faster after your ride, so you're ready to go again the next day.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the cycling podcast. A reminder that you can, of course, get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. You had something to add. We heard Marcel Kittel there. You had something to add on that, I think, Lionel?
Well, I was just going to talk about it. It's so early on, but when you see how the points competition already starts shaping up, you know, points lost on days like today do catch people out eventually as the race goes on. And not to be there to contest a finish, as Demar wasn't yesterday, you know, Sagan's been there both days. This is why he kind of wins the green jersey more or less every year. I mean, he's won five. Could equal Eric Zabel's record this year with a sixth win. The most versatile of all of the sprint finishers anyway, so he's got that advantage. But yeah, I mean, just hearing Kittel there, he's not really here for the green jersey necessarily, but he would like to get some stage wins.
Crashes are really the topic du jour, aren't they? And a lot of guys caught up in crashes, some yesterday as well with wounds today. But one team that's been particularly badly affected so far is Mitchelton Scott. Not the first time they've had this kind of start to the Tour de France. Was it 2014 when the team time trial came quite late into the race and they barely had enough riders to ride it? I think they were down to five.
Yeah, it was stage 9, wasn't it, over in Brittany before a long transfer south. And you're right, had they lost four riders and they started with the minimum and basically just had to nurse the five they had over the line. They're not in that sort of situation this time, but they've had a couple of crashes yesterday and again some today. Luke Durbridge, he really sort of hit the deck, sprung up again, and then just sort of was, all of his senses must have been just getting out of the way of every rider that was coming at him, and he managed to dive onto the grass. Adam Yates, of course, went down.
It went down a second day in a row, and Daryl Impey. I spoke to their sports director, Matt White, at the finish. Let's hear from him now.
Yeah, can you give us an injury report? You had a few guys involved in crashes there.
Yeah, look, the number one, Adam, is fine. He's fine. Minor scratches, obviously not ideal. Touching down twice in 2 days, but yeah, there's nothing to complain about with injury-wise, so it's a good sign.
And then Luke Durbridge, I think Daryl Impey as well came down.
Yeah, Luke Durbridge crashed, and then the one who's come down the hardest is Daryl, 2 kilometres to go. He was on the wheel of Sagan there and got squeezed and then got hit from behind, and he's come down quite hard, so... we'll have to wait and see what happens there for tomorrow, but he doesn't look too bad, but he's hit his head as well.
These are guys you need for the team time trial, don't you?
Yeah, for sure, they're key guys. So, yeah, we were 24 hours, but it hasn't been an ideal start to the Tour, but it is what it is.
And how does Adam deal with setbacks like that?
Yeah, he's a pretty cool customer. It's not his first Tour de France, but, you know, we just got to take it day by day, and we're in a good position. We could have been worse, and we want to take back some time tomorrow.
Well, that was Matt White, the Mitchelton Scott sports director. He was good humoured around the bus, but it's a real blow to them, and especially when there was so much, I suppose, controversy in the build-up about not bringing Caleb Ewan, their sprinter. All their eggs are in the Adam Yates basket, so a bit of pressure on them to perform with him and to be able to support him. And the team time trial is a big test tomorrow. Correction corner, live correction corner. It was 2015 Tour de France when that team time trial came very late in the race, stage 9, which was very unusual because there were more teams affected by riders being out of the race, and Mitchelton Scott or Orica Scott, as they were then, were the worst affected.
There's an interesting thing about it. I mean, I talked to a few Director Sportif today about the crashes and asking them if the 3 kilometer rule had changed anything, and the fact that, you know, teams are one rider down, which was the reason, you know, invoked by Mitchelton Scott for not taking Ewan with them. And they said, well, no, it doesn't change anything. You know, the guy Christian Guiberto is with Cofidis, and actually Christophe Laporte crashed also and went to hospital for checks because he had rib problems. Told me, you know, you could put the time limit at 10 kilometers before the line, and you could put the teams down to 5 riders, and they would still crash because the tension is such at the beginning of the tour. Everybody wants to be in the right positions. But he said, but there is a difference, is that you don't see like in 2015 when actually Mitchelton Scott had this terrible crash that you, and well, if you're kind of voyeur, you can still see on YouTube, I think, because there was a terrible video of it. But in those years, you had all the teams had these huge trains. You had the Quickstep trains, the Lotto train, the Mitchelton Scott train. Everybody had this train. And one, when the guy in the front of the train crashed, all the team, it was like, you know, kind of domino effect. I mean, Cofidis had the same problem with Buani when they all crashed you know, into one another, and we don't see these kind of crashes anymore, but crashes still happen.
Like you say, Francois, they could reduce the field to 60 riders and there would still be crashes at the finish. Dan Martin, who's riding for UAE, of course, he tweeted something interesting yesterday. It was basically a map of the number of roundabouts per 1,000 inhabitants in a country. And France has the highest rate in the whole of Europe of roundabouts. And he tweeted, it explains a lot, roundabout, roundabout, roundabout. And as we came in on the finish, there were two roundabouts or two big black circles where they've obviously removed roundabouts from the run-in and smooth tarmacked over. Presumably we'll put the roundabouts back in after the Tour de France.
I can tell you, I mean, the French hate roundabouts because they were, I think they're actually a British invention, but in France they became a kind of a craze of the roundabouts. And you know why? Most of the time, well, this is the popular belief, and I think it's true, it's not just an urban legend, but it's a good way for bribery, you know, because you order, you're a mayor of a town, you order the 2, 3, 4 roundabouts, you know, and it's a good way to get money to build the roundabout, put half of it in your pockets, and so that the reason why we have, and it's believed that the more roundabouts you see in a town, the more corrupt it is.
Well, we must ask David Lepartion about that if we're getting into it.
He's the mayor of a town that we're going through in a couple of days. Yeah, we'll ask him how many roundabouts he's put in.
Let's keep a very close eye on the number of roundabouts.
Just on that though, but, I mean, when you think about the Tour 30 years ago, it would have been on really rural roads. I mean, the peloton was smaller, the riders didn't ride as closely together. If you watch the old footage, these days they really are. They take every millimetre of road space from each other, and then when they go through the towns, traffic islands, high curbs, traffic calming measures, speed bumps, roundabouts, it's a problem that is getting worse as more of these traffic calming and street furniture things get put in. But the problem is often the crashes happen on the more benign bits of road where there's suddenly an island after a town, or, you know, because that's where the riders are thinking, right, well, we got through that town, now it's my turn to move up, and that's
well,
when
on
the problems
subject,
happen.
Lionel, I spoke to Ian Boswell at the finish. He was quite interested on the subject of crashing. He's not crashed himself, but he did wait for his teammate at Katusha Alpecin, Marcel Kittel, when he had a puncture today. Kittel then told him not to bother chasing to get back on. It was too late. Bit of news about Ian Boswell for listeners to the Cycling Podcast, and especially friends of the Cycling Podcast, because Ian Boswell's keeping an audio diary for us at the Tour de France, and he's been bombarding us already with clips. Not that I'm complaining, but he's really taken to this with great gusto and enthusiasm, which is wonderful. We'll hear his first clip here, which was him on his way to the Tour de France, just very brief, and then we'll hear my interview with him at the finish, where we talked about his first couple of days on the Tour de France, because it's his debut. And we'll go into a wee bit about why there have been so many crashes.
Bonjour à tous. Je m'appelle Ian Boswell. Je suis un cycliste américain avec l'équipe Katusha Alpecin. Yes, hello everyone. Ian Boswell here from Katusha Alpecin. And this is my first entry on my Tour de France daily diary. I'm on my way to the airport, listening to some Neil Young with my friend Marshall Opal, who's been over in Europe bike touring around.
Hi, everybody. And yeah, Marshall's driving my car. I'm a little bit, I'm not worried about the car. I'm more worried about other cars that may be damaged by Marshall's driving.
Some of us haven't been living in the Côte d'Azur for 6 years.
But anyways, yeah, flying up to Nantes today for the start of my first Tour de France, which starts this coming Saturday. And I'll be keeping a audio diary throughout the race and try to share my experience, maybe speak with some teammates, some other riders in the peloton, some staff, and just hope to give everyone my perspective of what it's like to race the Tour de France. All the best, everyone. Ciao.
First 2 stages of the Tour, how have they been?
It's been good. It's a little bit crazy. Not that, I mean, there's obviously been crashes and, you know, more crashes than most races. But I think it's just a result of the environment. It's just so loud and there's so many people and, you know, everyone's a bit stressed and just kind of stupid crashes. You know, I saw Rudy Millard today just crash in the middle of the road, hit a roundabout. And it's not that anyone's not paying attention. It's just there's so many other factors to the race. And, you know, to that, I will say, though, that I've noticed that the peloton here is very, you know, peloton here, they're good riders, more so than other races. Everyone is, like, the amount of close calls and saves has been definitely noticeable.
Is it just, I mean, I've heard lots of theories, you know, it's very hot as well. It's, you know, there's so much at stake. People are maybe riding closer together. You know, the roads have been around here can be quite narrow in places.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the roads here are a bit stressful. You know, when there's so many fans on the side of the road and they're kind of these rolling, undulating roads, it's not always easy to see where you're going. But I will say that people have, you know, all the teams here have this like distinct goal, and I think that makes it a bit more organized. And there's more, I would say, respect within the group because everyone has a specific role and everyone kind of respects what everyone else is doing. And then, you know, little mistakes happen. Although to that, I was thinking today, what it would be like. What's the perspective of Pozzo Vivo and the peloton compared to me? Because I can see what's coming. I can see over, even sitting down. You know, I can see what's coming up, and you know, if there's a guy on the motorcycle, you know, saying there's a center console or a crash, and I just see these, you know, shorter riders, and I just think they literally have the all day. They don't see what's coming up.
Riding
and it's
in the
completely
dark.
Different. Yeah, it's a different peloton to them.
Did you have some encouraging words for your old friend Lawson Craddock today?
Yeah, I came past him a couple times, and he had a pain face on all day. But I assume he's come in. I assume he finished.
He may have dropped off. He was still in the bunch, 13 k's to go. So.
Yeah. But I mean, I think he'll finish today, which is, you know, he's a tough cookie. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's the Tour, and you work so hard to get here. You know, to crash on stage one. You know, we'll see. Tomorrow's a team time trial. You know, I think in his mind, he knew if he could make it through today, then, you know, possibly can get through tomorrow as well, and that's one more day further.
So that was Ian Boswell, our audio diarist. We'll maybe hear clips from that throughout the Tour, and it'll be released after the Tour de France. The worst crash victim so far in this Tour de France is, of course, Lawson Craddock, the Education First rider, American rider, who had a nasty fall quite early on stage one. He broke his shoulder, and he broke his clavicle and his shoulder, and he had a really nasty cut above his eye with stitches put in. He finished remarkably today, and he was in the bunch for most of the stage. He got dropped a few times, but he was there, and that was quite remarkable when you saw the state of him this morning. And at the finish too, I have to say, he was wincing, and as is often the case, they're in more discomfort when they get off the bike than when they're on the bike. Anyway, grabbed a very quick word with him at the finish. Here is what Lawson Craddock had to say.
I've suffered for years on a bike. I've suffered for half my life on a bike, but really never liked that. So it's a different kind of pain than what I'm used to. But, you know, that's the situation I'm in right now. So I just got to continue to keep fighting and, you know, hope for the best. Hope that it heals a little bit day by day. I've got great support from the team doctors and the team, and so for me that's really encouraging. And you know, I'm glad to make it to the finish today. It's $100 I'm donating to the Outkick Velodrome in Houston, Texas. So yeah, for me that's a good day.
Lawson, how are you feeling about tomorrow? It's a big test tomorrow for you, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the team time trial will definitely be a big test for me, like you said. You know, right now is just glad to make it through today. We'll put our focus on tomorrow. Obviously, it's a huge blow for me just to not be able to help out with the team, to the team. I think that was a big reason why I'm here, was to, you know, really help drive the team time trial tomorrow. So for me, that's really disappointing to have, probably not be able to do that. But you know, at this point, just see how I feel in the morning again. See how, if I can hold the bars, just continue to work on it and keep fighting.
That was Lawson Craddock battling on, and tomorrow the team time trial will be a huge, huge test for him. I'm reminded a little bit of 2013 when Geraint Thomas had a broken bone in his pelvis, and team time trial came on day three, and that was a huge test for him that he came through. Lawson Craddock will be hoping to do the same tomorrow. As some of you may know, we produced a book this year, A Journey Through the Cycling Year, with contributions from Francois Thomazeau and Lionel and lots of other people. It is available throughout the Tour de France, 25% off from Watterson's and Foyles, which are the two major booksellers in the UK. If you go to the checkout, that's online store for Watterson's and Foyles, and enter the discount code Tour de France, that's just Tour de France, it's not case sensitive, so it can be all lowercase, you can get 25% off our book. The audio version of A Journey Through the Cycling Year is also now available. That is available Audible, and I guess, are there other places available for where you can get audiobooks? I don't know, but it's certainly an Audible. It's available on Audible. So if you don't want to read the book...
Is it available on Audible?
Did I not mention that?
Yeah. It's a cracking good listen. It's like a podcast, but also a book, but like a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. Listen, before, a few weeks ago, Francois, you conducted an interview on our behalf with Romain Bardet, who... Mm-hmm. A good thing, but we've not spoken about Romain Bardet yet because he's been keeping his head out of trouble the first couple of days.
Absolutely. We're talking of crashes, and actually at G2R, you have an impression that every year they improve their skills, their experience, their everything they're doing, and it also proves through their, you know, behavior in the finishes, in the finales, because they didn't have lots of crashes so far. They were really kept out of trouble. Bardet is one of the guys, well, the GC leaders, who still had no issue whatsoever. They actually had a crash today, Sylvain Dillier, the former Swiss champion, which is quite a blow. It depends on his state, but normally it's not so bad, because he was actually that's what one of the team directors told me, he was actually hired only for the team time trial. He came on the Tour de France almost only for that, you know. Like he could go home on
so
the day
often
after tomorrow,
away, isn't it? Well, so yeah. Often Craddock, away
Lawson
yeah.
Craddock's
yeah.
the same, you know. Mm. He was here for the team time trial. The Tony Gallopin as well, of course, is not at his best.
At his best,
he's,
yeah.
He's
he was injured
injuries,
before the tour. But by and large, you know, Bardet looks good. He looks in great shape. He's again improved in many, many fields. He says in the interview I had with him that he's improved in time trials. That's always been his weakness, and his level of confidence looks very, very high. So. What that means for the Tour de France this year, we'll see.
Well, recently you caught up with him at an altitude training camp in, I think, Mars or Saturn, or it sounded like it was in a.
He was actually in Sierra Nevada, up in the mountain, and he was in his room, and he.
I thought this was the next frontier of altitude
training. Because the thing is, I couldn't get there because it was absolutely almost impossible to get there. You have to go to Malaga or Granada, then then drive up the mountain, and then. It was impossible to get back and find a flight in reasonable. So it was very, 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 very tricky. So we decided to do it by phone. But the problem was, the connection, the phone signal up there in the mountain is very, is not very good. And personally, he asked me to call him back. I was driving in the southwest of France, and I had to, pull over. at a motorway service station where a signal was not much better. So from time to time, it was technically speaking. Yeah. Well, what I mean is technically speaking, it was quite interesting because I had the impression like to be in the old days of the radio, like with the scratches and everything. Like, can you hear me, Dr. Livingston?
First question, first question, is there life on Mars?
It's something like that.
But actually, I've listened to the whole thing and it's very interesting. He sounds incredibly relaxed. I picture him lying on his bed.
That's a fact. He was.
And he sounded very, very relaxed. So it's nice to hear a bit of that. And it was a very wide-ranging interview. We're not going to inflict too much on you because the quality isn't great. And it's not your fault, Francois. But we'll play a little bit of it because it's interesting. It's interesting to hear his state of mind in the build-up to the tour. So here is Francois and Romain Bardet.
Yeah, I'm currently in Sierra Nevada, lying on my bed after a rest day, but now sitting 230 meters above the sea level, but I'm good block of training ahead of the next duration. Training camp, we do that kind of training camp since now 3 years, and for at least 2 weeks. Every day looks approximately the same. Just to ride, eat, have some meds, and then sleep. But in May it's cold, and there is nothing to do but riding your bike. Yeah. I think that the Col de Porter at the top of the really short stage, the 65K stage in the Pyrenees will be really hard because it's the same bottom of the Plata Day, who Nibali won a few years ago. And it's really steep, and then you keep the main road, and there is still more than 10K to go, and it's really narrow road. You're already climbing maybe for 20. More than 20K, and it's really hard. I'm really looking forward to covers. I really like this kind of races, but all the Tour de France, all your implication, these 3 weeks races can just stop if you're in a bad crash, in a bad puncture, or even worse, a bad crash. All can be over during this stage. So in this way of thinking, it could be very dangerous, but we will see a lot of things happen during this stage, and the gap between the main contenders will be bigger than some mountain stages, for sure. You can't sometimes avoid bad luck and things like that. So everyone is afraid of that. For me to be a good cyclist, a good athlete, I have to be a good human being, just thinking about how much harder you have to train, what you have to hit, and how long you have to rest. That can work for maybe one season, but if you want to do your career, For me, that's not the plan. I'm stronger on the bike. More focus on the bike when I can express also myself in other dom and for sure. So I spend a lot of time riding my bike, reading the last 2D of sports physiology. Life is not really about cycling.
There's a particular. One favorite subject of the cycling podcast is also one of your favorite subjects. That's wine. Can you tell us about your passion for wine?
Yeah. I don't like to go to a shop and buy my wine. I like to go on the vineyards and to knock at the door and if the guy have the time to explain how he processed his wine, the reason he chose to mix different sapage. And that's what made the history, and that's what make everything in wine.
So that was Romain Bardet, who is at the moment looking pretty good and untroubled. The only sort of overall contender who came through that crash well positioned was Alejandro Valverde, of course.
Mm.
But yeah, Bardet is looking good, and a big day for him and AG2R tomorrow. It's a big day for the race tomorrow, isn't it? Mm. The team time trial. And yeah. I think you had a quick word with Stefan Kuhn from BMC.
Yes, because I had also had a quick one with Richie Porten on, but I mean, on, you know, in the media scrum in the morning, he was saying how important the team time trial is for BMC, because obviously they're probably the world best specialist of this effort. Well, you know, Sky are pretty good at it as well. But if you look in the last 5 or 6 years, BMC have always dominated this sort of events on grand tours. And so actually the man in charge of, you know, kind of anchoring and you know, being in charge of the BMC TTT team is Stefan, the Swiss Stefan Kung. So I asked him a couple of questions about tomorrow's stage.
Stefan Kung, tomorrow a team time trial, that's going to be a first crucial moment of the Tour de France, where we know your abilities as a team, you know, as a time trialist. How important is it going to be?
Oh, it's really important for us. We're one of the best teams in this discipline, so obviously we want to go for the stage win. And yesterday we had a bit of a hiccup with Richie losing time, so our goal would be to take all this time back.
Personally, what are your ambitions in this Tour de France?
Oh, I mean, it's more of a domestique role for Richie, but as soon as I see a chance, I'll have a go. And if this doesn't happen, then there's still the individual time trial on the second last day.
Yeah, BMC have got good form already this season. They've won two of the three team time trials at World Tour level this season. If you had to pick the top three, you would say BMC, Team Sky and Movistar, probably. But with Port, Froome and Quintana having all lost time, particularly to the likes of Bardet, it's almost like a sort of handicap team time trial, isn't it?
It's funny because I wonder if had Gaviria still been in yellow, whether we'd also be talking about Quickstep, because they've got a very strong team for this, with Bob Jungels, people like that. They're always good as well. They often win team time trials.
Yeah.
But without Gaviria and yellow, perhaps not so much of an incentive.
It's a big day for BMC, not just because Richie Port needs to get back into the overall picture before the mountains, but because the team's future hangs in the balance. We may hear something in the next couple of days. I gather there were meetings today between the team owners and some potential sponsors to save the team. The problem is that a lot of the biggest name riders have already looked elsewhere and found something else, and I gather from talking to someone with what should we say, familiar with the situation, that Richie Port will end up at Team Trek next season. That's been strongly rumoured, but I gather that is now a done deal. So Port to Trek Segafredo for 2019. This conversation actually took place right outside the Trek team
bus. That
was
also reported today as well. Sorry,
scooped.
Lionel. Sorry
scooped
to say
already.
That. But we heard someone else said that Luca Guercellino, the general manager at Trek, had been seen chatting to Primoz Roglic recently, a Lotto Jumbo rider, and that sounded plausible because Trek are certainly in the market for, as you said the other day, Lionel, anyone who can ride a bicycle uphill.
Felt a bit little unfair saying that, because they've got Bauke Mollema, who, you know,
that's
is a
right.
top 10 contender, stage win potential. But they didn't bring Harlinson Pantano, which, I mean, what's that all about? Is that bang out of form or leaving the team maybe at next season?
A new entrant for Crouchy Corner. I'm sad about Quickstep. I mean, Gaviria, because he got the same time because he was caught up in the crash and the finish, he's still 6 seconds down and he's second overall still. So if you look at that GC, if Quickstep win the team time trial, he's back in yellow. So that would seem to me to be a big incentive for them. And I think they're one of the teams that should perform very well. Although Team Sky, I think, maybe the slight favourite.
So you mean Geraint Thomas, the man who had no chance to win the prologue last year, might be in yellow tomorrow?
He might be, yeah. I mean, he's
good memory,
Francois.
Good memory. Richard did say that, didn't he, in front of a live audience?
Richard said, GC tomorrow night, Gaviria. Well, it depends. I'm not making any predictions. It's a fool's game. It's a fool's game.
Yeah, absolutely.
We always get it wrong.
We should wrap things up, shall we?
Yes. Where are we off to? Richard, the hotels you've booked so far have been absolutely A1. A tumble-down chateau, a castle on day one, and last night was stunning.
Possibly one of the best ever
Tour
and
hotels.
And I'm afraid to say, chaps, that's as good as it gets.
Is it all downhill from here?
All downhill from here. We should say before we go, we've got Kilometer Zero coming tomorrow, sponsored by Hansgrohe. First of 15 episodes. What's it on, Lionel?
It's on the Tour's debutants. People who are riding the Tour de France for the first time and how they have enjoyed the opening weekend.
Okay, Lionel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, everyone.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Tom Wallin.